Blog Talk Radio.
Bang, 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 bang. Indeed, indeed. Here we go again. This is Mike Ball. Welcome to this week's Left Ahead podcast. I waited a day because of the political developments. I almost did something on Bernie Sanders, and I thought, no, we got something even more pressing here. Let's talk about Dallas. Let's talk about dead cops. Let's talk about dead civilians. Let's talk about guns. Let's talk about violence and whether we have tipping points. How many of us, I included, thought that Sandy Hook was going to be it? 20 kids and what was it, seven adults murdered in an elementary school? 20 elementary school students, that should be it. That should be the tipping point. That's what everybody said. Is now all of a sudden the NRA is going to have to shut up, that the Congress is going to have to put up, that we're going to have to start going toward this. But instead, what did we see was both Congress and NRA, the puppet and puppet masters, got out there and said the stupidest things. Like, well, you know, he got those guns legally, or his mom did, so this wouldn't, you know, these laws wouldn't have stopped this particular purchase, so it's no use in it. And that's not the point. And that's a stupid thing, a really, really moronic. No, it's crazy. It's crazy talk. If you want one or 10 laws to stop all violence and go back when we have, you know, like something like 300 million guns in American hands, and we're going to think that, well, if we pass the law, if it doesn't stop all violence right away, it doesn't retroactively cover the incidents of the most recent murders, mass murders, then they're no good, which is crap, utter crap. And we can't do that. We got to go, do the piecemeal stuff and even start off with these mealy-mouth things like President Obama wanted, as they're euphemistically called, common sense gun laws, which means that you don't let known crazy people get it. You don't let people just buy guns at gun shows or from individuals and get them in all kinds of hands where they shouldn't be. Those are the simplest things. But tipping points. Okay, so we have five Leos, five police officers assassinated in Dallas. Is that the tipping point? I mean, that was a god-awful thing. It's, you can't really rack it up, and the hundreds of civilians who have been killed by police officers under very questionable circumstances, and almost invariably the police officers skate. We give them endless amount of tolerance. They have a dangerous job. Dangerous job. Speaking of, if you happen to be around and do want to comment on this, if you don't have a block number, you can call me. And I don't connect block numbers, but you call at 718-664-6966, and I'll repeat that in a minute. So you can call me. Just don't give me an anonymous number, as I don't connect those. So the number to call in is 718-664-6966. So let's talk about it. And what makes a tipping point? We've had, so many instances. We've had single murders and lots of mass murders. It's like there's a mass gun killing, every week. I mean, it's incredible. But it isn't incredible anymore. It's quite credible, and we do believe them. And so each one is supposed to be the tipping point. If it's supposed to be the innocent this or that, and that's supposed to make all the difference in the world. Will it be five innocent police officers? I mean, they weren't doing anything, and they were killed by sniper fire, cowardly guy up on a rooftop, and did it as immorally as you possibly can. So, you can't say, well, they deserved it because they were doing this or this terrible thing. No. They were protecting the protesters. They were out there. They were behaving legally. No. But you think about it, and people were understandably horrified. I mean, these are the people who supposedly protect us, and so you murder them? No, that's not that. So is that the tipping point? Is 5 police officers tonight. I understand we have hundreds and hundreds of civilians every year killed by mostly by police. We have hundreds and hundreds of, or no, we have thousands of civilians killed by other civilians every year. And what is a tipping point? At what point do we look at those 300 million guns and think, oh, something's wrong here. What can we do with this gun culture? And I think, you know, many police officers already and their supervisors and even their local politicians are saying, we don't need to have military weapons in people's hands. We don't need for people to be able to do this kind of thing, not as a sniper, not going into some place and mass murdering with these gigantic magazines and these rapid-fire military weapons, army weapons. We don't do that. So there are many people, most people, don't want that out there. So we could start with that. But gun control may not be the real answer, but what we need is some cultural shifts here. So we have, what is a tipping point? What makes it? If 20 elementary school students wasn't enough, 5 cops going to be enough? And what is that going to mean? Is that going to do it? Are the lawmakers going to finally get their act together? Are enough civilians going to say, we just got to stop this stuff, we got to do something about it? We need a cultural shift, and of course the legislative shift. But we also need a cultural shift. I mean, we do have there are many countries in the world that also have large numbers of and large percentages of their civilians who have weapons, and military weapons in some cases. Israel is like that. Of course, Israel, you've got to check them in. And most countries, you have to check them in if it's part of the what we would call a well-regulated militia, which in all the other countries in the world, this is, means what it says, is it is the National Guard or the auxiliary army, and you check in your guns when you're not doing military duty. America should do that. It works in other countries, so let's not apples and orange or donuts and bialys this thing here. We have a situation where it's out of hand, and the culture is out of hand. So what is the tipping point, which is going to move the culture and the laws at the same time? Because they're going to move together, and they really have to. So we'll do that, and then we've got to look at the other side of it, the police. You know, many of the protesters were there because the police murders of innocent civilians, either unarmed or gun hidden in a pocket and not out. The cops murdered one guy, and they had to pull the gun out and say, see, he was armed. Well, yeah, kind of, but that was then and the other guy in the car. And he said, I am licensed to carry. Let me show you my license. And he did what the police would say, went for his license, and the cop, you know, piled, what is it, 6 or 7 shots into his chest and murdered him? No. We have to stop the cops, the bad cops. And there are bad cops out there, because we've got to look at them and think, oh, you know, we've got to give the cops endless amount of slack because they're, you know, putting their lives at risk every day. Well, kind of are and kind of aren't. And I have looked up those numbers, and the vast majority of police officers, well over 90%, never have to fire their weapons or get fired on in their entire careers. It doesn't happen. It isn't all that. There are some bad places and bad cities, and some cops, for one reason or another, engage in gun battles, you know, every couple years. But it's really rare, and we really should stop thinking of cops as constantly under fire. If you want a dangerous job, talk to a firefighter. Every time they go out, they could very well not come back. It's a big deal. Firefighters are more injured, and they get burned and crushed, and it's a dangerous job, more dangerous than a typical police officer's job. So let's not say cops earn a free pass on everything because of their police officers. So we need to look at these alleged bad apples. And there are a lot of them. And the protesters were out there in Dallas and other places because the cops get a free ride and they murder people. and it's murder, and you can see it, and it's on video, and there are witnesses everywhere, and almost every time, the cops skate. So that's why people are angry. So that's the other cultural thing. There's the gun culture. There's the violence culture in general. I mean, all kinds of people, civilians as well as cops out there doing nasty, nasty things. So got to do that. But you also got to deal with the police culture. And I'm in Boston, and there's a particular brand of it here because there are, I think, tougher cities. I found Chicago cops to be nastier than Boston cops. I've known quite a few. I live up here on the hill with a police academy, and I know a fair number of them, and I know them by name, and I chat with them, and they serve in elections areas with me, and we talk, and I knew the superintendent in chief pretty well. He was lived out two houses away when he was there. So I do that, and I grew up with many relatives, lots of cousins and some uncles who were state cops in Maryland, for example, and they were out there and they ride the roads at night, and you know, they would get shot at more frequently than a city cop would. So there are things. I grew up liking cops, and they were always in the house. My mother ran Red Cross chapters, and we had police in there all the time. And she and I and my sister, we taught them life safety, life saving, and first aid, and you know, we knew lots of cops. But not all cops are well behaved, and not all cops are suited for the job. And so then what do you do when you need to get rid of them? And the answer is normally, if you pardon the pun, self-policing. But you see that doesn't work for accountants or physicians or police officers. When they are the prosecutors and judges of their own people, they don't do it. They, you know, we've seen too many bad doctors just standing there. Oh, I'll get there. Hi there. Who's joining us?
Yeah, how you doing today? I was listening to your conversation. Calling from the Midwest,
uh-huh.
St. Louis
yeah.
area.
Hi there, yeah.
And
so
my name
what you thinking?
My name is Pianchi. Well, you know, here's the point.
Excuse huh?
me. The citizens have – citizens do, but I guess they don't know that they have control over those employees that they call – police officers.
I'll do that,
they
yeah.
can set the. Well, yes, they do. They control the budget.
Okay, third hand. Yeah, all right. All right, okay.
Well, yeah, they control the budget. I mean, they elect their officials to represent them on the city council, and it's the city council that approves, disapproves, take a budget and budget items. So police officers are nothing more merely other than employees. And it has gotten to a place now where it has been reversed. The police are the boss and mm-hmm. the citizens are not. And you see this this violation of constitutional protection, especially due process, and a lot of mm-hmm. other things that go along with that. And it has to stop. Now, I'm totally against. And I know you stay up in the northern part of the United States, and your attitudes up there is different than those that's down in the southern parts, and surely those in the Mideast when it comes down to the Second Amendment. I'm totally against any more attacks, which I say are depriving of American citizens of the right to own weapons, and should I say legally. So, no, police, why is it that citizens don't control the behavior of police officers? And one other thing, I think that there needs to be a national definition of the use of deadly force. Right now, it's left up to the states by state statute, which is passed and interpreted by the agencies that it applies to. What's your thoughts on those?
Well, we do have, unfortunately, a long, long colonial-based history on states' rights, and there are things that are prohibited from being national, and that's one of them. I don't know. I think we're going to have more gun regulations long before we would have that kind of definition. But, you know, to your point, otherwise, though, we already limit a lot of the gun things. Automated weapons, machine guns, for example, bazookas, that kind of stuff. Those have been outlawed since in 1939, I believe. There was a time
right.
when plain folks could own anything. So there are some things that are forbidden, and I don't know any good argument for people who need to have AK-47 class of weapons, any of those things. So I personally, now you're wrong about the Northeast. I mean, they're hunters out here are like crazed guys. They love killing things. Everybody's got guns. They got handguns. They got long rifles. And I spent a lot of years in the South too. And it's pretty much the same down there. As people, there are a fair number of handguns in there, but almost every house has rifles and shotguns. But it's not as unusual in the Northeast as you would think. Harder in Boston. Yeah.
What I meant is that the people in the Northeast had a different attitude towards, for instance, the death penalty. You know, the death penalty is easily obtained in the southern states than it is up in the Northeast, where I think you just about pretty much forbid it. So there is a difference in thoughts, not only in the Northeast, but you go out west. So actually, the United States is divided up into about 11 different nations, and you would have to recognize them to really appreciate it. But go ahead, sir.
Yeah, so to the point, I I'd like to see more controls on the wars. I'd like to see, what everybody left and right calls common sense gun controls. And I'm for damned, I don't understand how Congress can look at something like Sandy Point and not say, okay, let's do the low-hanging fruit, the simplest things, and do something to keep us kind of safe. And because the argument that, well, the criminals are going to get their guns anywhere, so that's not the point at all. Because, many of those guns come from South Carolina. Are you going to stop everybody from South Carolina from owning anything because they sell them on the black market? That's not going to happen either.
Well, I'm a federal firearms license applicant. Mm-hmm. I'm an African-American. For me to have a federal firearms license where I can sell guns and ammunition and do transfer, I have to be impeccable. I cannot have ever been insane. I cannot be a felon. I cannot done this. I cannot done that. And those are and cannot smoke marijuana. But those are the questions that's asked on that application, and similar questions when a person is trying to buy a weapon, when you do the background check. Many of the safeguards are already in existence. They're there.
Okay.
To prevent.
All right.
Somebody
then what about
who
it?
Has
what about
mental instability? Go ahead, sir.
What about gun shows and person to person sales, and how are we covering those? And we're not.
Well, it's difficult.
Let those go.
It's difficult. It's difficult to handle person to person sales, but a person to person gun shows, they will contact online the NIC and run your name. And it either come back in several different statuses. It'll come back status that gives you the green light to go ahead and sell the weapon, or it'll come back questionable. And when it come back questionable, you're not supposed to sell that gun to a person until you get an okay.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the two things we're looking at here is I try not to get too crazy about the gun laws, because I don't know when we're ever going to do what I consider to be, the minimal fine-tuning of the gun laws. The other half,
I think it's there already. I think it's there already. You made mention to an AR. You made mention to the AK-47, the AR-15. AR-15 comes in different calibers. Something as low as a .22, which, a boy uses to go squirrel hunting, mm-hmm. or even practicing, up to, a larger caliber. So it's the caliber that's based on the usage that you're applying it to. And another thing, when it comes down to personal safety, does it not depend on what it is that you feel safe with? Some people feel safe with 22. Some people feel safe with a 45. So we can't tell a person that, no, you think that you need this for your safety, whereas they think that they need something else.
Okay, well, all right, you're a firearms dealer, so what do you think about people having these military-class weapons that can fire as fast as you can squeeze the trigger, and high caliber, and lots of ammo, and easy switched magazines, and so like the Sandy Hook thing. So you go in there, and you can mow down 20 kids in a flash. Do we need those for personal safety?
Well, yes, it's not the first of it's guns are semi, rifles are semi-automatic. They point and shoot. Now, if you can get an automatic firing rifle or gun, if you qualify for it, it's just a whole lot more paperwork, and you got to pay, of course, guess what, a bigger fee. But it's not the gun; it's the individual. Even if you was, if we only had bows and arrows, you still would have somebody out there with a quiver full of arrows and trying to kill people with them. I don't think it's not the gun. You can lay a gun down; gun's not going to jump up and bite you. It's the individual.
Okay, but if the guy in Dallas, the sniper in Dallas, had bows and arrows, five cops would not be dead, for example. That's just, you know, that's the typical of thing. It's like you say, oh, well, people can take a club or a knife and kill you. Yeah, kind of, but it's not going to kill 20 kids in Sandy Hook Elementary School. You know, it's and our
yeah,
five
but
cops
why
on
would
a
you,
rooftop.
Why would you? Do you drink alcohol, sir? If I could ask.
Yep.
And I.
Sure.
Well, I don't. Now, if I have somebody running in my car after they've been drinking, found to be intoxicated, then should I say we need to get rid of all alcohol?
That sounds like a straw man to me. I don't see how that relates to anything. It's like, you know, it's more like, what is the extreme here, and do you want somebody to be driving a tank on the street and running you over, or do you want somebody to have a mini?
It's not that, it's the fact that they're intoxicated. It's the fact that they're intoxicated. So, because the persons in the events that you mentioned done what they done with weapons, I didn't do it. I may have those same weapons, do not have an inclination of getting involved in that type of behavior. It's something mentally wrong with those individuals that's doing these things. So,
I think
because of mental illness,
anybody who mass murders somebody is crazy. Yeah.
Absolutely, because of the mental illness. And why should all of us suffer? You know, at one point in time, and I'm not, you know, trying to denigrate anybody, the American Psychiatric Society Association had labeled homosexuality as being a mental illness.
Yeah,
now,
pretty recently,
they have all the rights. Now, that's not a straw man argument. That is factual.
All right, but I'm going back to the point now. I honestly can't be convinced that we need to have these military weapons for our own self-defense. You know, if we lived in Westeros and all the bad guys were coming at us, that might be one thing. But I don't see that. If you want, you know, to protect your family and you feel that the right way to do that is owning one or more firearms, then, you know, a sidearm or a shotgun makes perfect sense. But I don't understand the weapons of mass murder as being necessary. I really don't. Because I know the argument, well, if you make one regulation, there's a... But then the people look at it and say, yeah, you're right. You don't have this.
It never stops. You're absolutely right. You know, I'm going to tell you something else. You can take a 20-gauge shotgun and put deer rifle slugs in it, and you have just as much. You have actually got more lethal capacity than the Russian-made gun that the gentleman used in Dallas. So it's a lot of argument, a lot of room for argument, a lot of room for discussion. I'm totally against any further decimation of the Second Amendment, and I would just be against it. So anyway, I don't want to take up too much more time of your program.
Yeah, no, thanks.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate your thoughts, and I appreciate you because you are, as self-defined and correctly expert. I mean, it's your business, so I understand that. So thank you for your thoughts.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, good afternoon. Okay, and we didn't get to my point about the police officers. So the other side of this thing is, here in Boston, they like to say they have the oldest police department in the country, and that historically depends on how you figure it, how things are organized, etc. But anyway, it's a long term. But they don't want to give up anything. There are a number of cities in the country who do a very good job with civilian review boards, where if there's a question of police behavior, it doesn't have to be murder, They don't have to kill somebody to do it, but if there are ways that people don't feel the police have behaved professionally and people have been injured in one way or another, then the Civilian Review Board can talk about it. Boston is really opposed to that. It's one of the cities that doesn't want to do that, despite the success elsewhere in the nation. So I'm looking at thinking, now Dallas was one of the more advanced cities that it's amazing to me and horrific that that was where the five officers were killed. You got to wonder now, will culture shift in that way too? So we've had, you know, this year and particularly in last year also, is one young black man after another killed at the hands of police officers, and the protesters are saying they were assassinated. And so far, the police have not been charged with it. And as you can understand, you'd like to be able to trust the police officers. That's the way I grew up. So the question comes, what are you going to do about it? Will the police make the difference? And it looks like they are not going to be in a position to prosecute and judge themselves and winnow the bad guys out. And there's where things have to be done. And I don't know whether it's going to come from each state legislature or whether it have to be nationals. But certainly police officers who are caught on audio and video, say it, murdering civilians, they need to be taken to task. They need to be held responsible. And that's going to make a whole lot of people a lot more comfortable with the police, and I think it's going to make the police a lot more comfortable with each other. But it's hard because that is cultural. That is as cultural as the gun ownership. So what are you going to do? We have to get it to a point where the bad cops, the bad malefactors, are taken to task and they end up being prosecuted and, if necessary, jailed. So we need to start that right away. And the question is are the recent deaths of the young black men, are those tipping points? Do we have a tipping point for the violence and the guns with the five black officers police officers in Dallas? Do we have tipping points with all of these killings? Or can they combine? Can we look at all these deaths, all these unnecessary deaths, all these horrors, and say, okay, we have to do something about this? And the question comes, what are we going to do about that? And is it going to be at a local level or the federal level? And we have some very plain things to do about guns. It's not quite as plain to do with the police officers, but in cities like Boston, where they don't do it, in Baton Rouge, where they looks like they're not going to do anything about that murder. So if you're going to let those people skate, what are you going to do? And I think the answer is probably going to be bring in outside police administrators. And that's a hard fight because the local, we got to promote our own and this and that. Well, promoting your own is put the same tired guys with the same tired attitudes in play, and that doesn't work. So one way or another is the police department and the city and the state going to police itself? And if not, what are we going to do about it? And there's a dichotomy. We know that for guns should be seen as tools, not toys, and cops need to be seen as respected but held accountable. And both of those sets of things are quite possible, but it's not going to be easy. But I'm hoping that Dallas is going to be a tipping point, and all these deaths of young black men this year and last year and the year before can be tipping points, because we've had enough, and we should have learned from the Sandy Hooks and the Baton Rouges, and we can do this, I think, but it's going to be a big cultural shift, and we should start at it as soon as we possibly can. Thank you.